So next group is agriculture and agri-food business.
So where's this? Mouse is a little hard to use. Okay, so on the agriculture and agri-food, certainly I think we were somewhat different perspective than what so far has been presented. And I noticed even in a couple of the groups, we were the one that sort of always seemed to be left out, although clearly, there we did make links, and other people have already made links. In our case, we didn't have a lot of success sort of defining sort of multiple variables. In the end, we really were looking at one key variable. In our discussion, we recognized that if we wanted to operationalize it, we could convert it into some other variables, some of our other factors. But really, our task sort of lent itself to was a focus on issues around dietary intake and consumption, particularly in relation to the provisioning of that food that determines that. So recognizing that intake and consumption, certainly as they connect with diabetes, are linked to the quality of the food, which is composition, and the quantity of the food. So I think a good point that was made in the group that our focus was not really on food, but on diet. So recognizing that as a key distinction, and we can sometimes get lost in the details about this food being healthier and not irrelevant topic, but it's not the same topic. The issue of consumption can be focused around individuals, and it can be focused on populations. Certainly, in relation to behavior, then the individual is very important. Our discussion had some of that, but I think if you want to sum it up, I think it more related to populations. Our group, at some points, I sort of felt like we had two separate conversations going on. One was focused on North America, Canada and the U.S., and the other was focused on developing countries, particularly with our we had a strong representation from India, as we do in the meeting. And so we struggled to try to pull those together to make a coherent statement. And if you see elements of incoherence, then we'll attribute some of it to that, and the rest you can attribute to me. So looking at dietary consumption, we looked at some primary determinants: availability, accessibility, affordability, certainly as key. Those things are certainly in the hands of the agriculture and agri-food sector to a certain extent. They determine price, and that certainly affects consumer behavior. But we also, in this, perhaps more so in India than in Canada, but I think it cuts both ways, that in income level, the population and the sectors within it, it has a big determinant of what people have access to. And in India, certainly, and developing countries, sub-Saharan Africa, where a large percent, or if not the majority of people, fall below the poverty line, this is a different situation than what we often are talking about here in Canada. The issue of demand is another side of this. Even if the food is on the table, then if the demand isn't there, then it doesn't get eaten. And so clearly the links here are with in our discussion with some of the other things that have been discussed, psychobehavioral, social culture, and aspects around education. That we comment how slow people are to respond to education, but it is part of the what determines people's demand as well. The issue about differences, again, here, the cultural differences is we've just discussed are very important as well. So in India, the issues that determine demand are quite different than they are here in Canada. So what I think what our discussion really was about was and we had I have some complex notes that are a lot of arrows and things, and I couldn't translate them as quickly as our other colleague, but what we were really focusing on is on these causal links around dietary consumption, really in terms of the matrix, I think lends itself more to the discussion around pathways. So within that, I think headlines, the captions here around these issues of retail marketing, structural factors, value chain, production, and policy related to the time, we had different degrees of and amount of discussion on each. Around marketing, then recognizing that some of the issues have been discussed in other forum, you know, and certainly everywhere, but very much in North America, then the economies of scale define what food gets into the stores and into people's homes. Supermarkets certainly are a big component. Control through consolidated markets and distribution chains control the access of food, let's say that. They respond to, and they're concerned about issues of quality, and so how that affects their relationships with producers is important. They're concerned about consistency of supply, et cetera, et cetera. The concentration of the market is certainly a factor that makes it hard sometimes, well, in many ways, to influence. I think it was commented that in Canada that we have four really companies are controlling most of the sector, and they are not particularly responsive. They don't need to be responsive. They're more concerned about their very small margins anyway. So putting issues around health within stores is not something that they're as responsive as some of us might want. They do respond to consumer demand, and you know if that demand is health driven, then certainly that's real. But that demand can also be just the opposite as well. It could be cultural. It could be many different things. We spend a lot of time talking about various structural factors that have an impact on the production of food and the distribution of food, particularly subsidies. Again, recognizing a distinction between a North American and a developing country perspective. Also recognizing a distinction between large-scale commercial industrial agriculture, which is certainly the dominant model in North America, the global model, but the reality, in fact, in developing countries, in India, where the largest number of people employed in agriculture are small farmers, where often in many countries the majority of the food is produced by smallholder farmers rather than the big companies. That they, in that situation, they are absolutely critical to food production, and it's the nature of what they produce then has an impact on what people consume, what they have access to, and then ultimately in their health as well. How these sectors are in the structure of the market, how the whole food system globally is capitalized is important. In situations where poverty is the norm, then it's a whole different issue. Trade, we just mentioned, we threw that in. We didn't really have a lot of insight into it. Just again, coming back to this issue of smallholder agriculture, recognizing that essentially that the playing field is balanced and is skewed towards large-scale production. In many parts of the world, and certainly international bodies, very much the discussion is on reinvestment in small-scale agriculture in India, sub-Saharan Africa, whatever. Local production in North America is certainly something to take note of as well. It's a different issue, though. We have to recognize it's not driven by that sort of the majority of the small farmers. It's driven by the consumer demand. It's zoomed really by consumer values, which are social, environmental, health-related values. In terms of the sort of the size of impact they have on what people are eating in North America, it's small. But conceptually, it's providing an alternative. And that conceptual alternative, I think, is important in changing the people's thinking, ultimately in changing societal behavior. We talked about a number of things around value chain, and we had a sort of a very free-floating discussion, and I've tried to summarize some of the key sort of points that came up in that, so looking at issues that are important around production, distribution of food. I'll say a little bit more about production here in a second, but distribution, processing. Certainly, there's what goes on in the way food process has a tremendous impact in relationship both to health and also to issues around affordability and accessibility. I've also been victimized here, like everybody else. Preparation came up on several points, and I think interestingly, both in our discussion from a North American perspective and our Indian perspective, recognizing that increasingly, and particularly within the retail sector, people are purchasing food that is pre-prepared for immediate sort of transport to the home and consumption. There's one thing to be going out to eat, but the other is just to have that to take home with you. But it works in India as well, and the example that was given, and I didn't itemize here, was around the increasing consumption of eggs in India. You know, there's a complex number of factors that are responsible for that, but a very simple aspect of that, it's a prepackaged food that's, you know, relatively storable, and it's just there for, you know, and it makes it sort of a nice meal rate like that. So it was a really interesting example. And then issues around storage as well. Producers, we didn't really go very far with this in terms of the duration of our time, but I think the key point was made that it's in North America, with agriculture being primarily agriculture, it's profit driven, and if you're going to get producers to produce foods that seem as a preferable alternative, then there has to be money to be made. They have to get returned for that. Breeding more productive crops or crops with certain properties that have value added, now that could be part of it. Particularly if we're interested in fat consumption, you can alter the composition of the food itself of edible oils, et cetera, and have more omega-3s, et cetera. But in India, then I think the issues around production, certainly there's multiple. We unfortunately didn't have time to go far with that. Policy, I think some of the things we've talked about, come back here. Again, we just sort of recognize that a lot of what we're saying and the it was going to change, it has to be related to policy. We weren't we're not forthcoming about what specifically recommendation, but recognizing within terms of food supply and food procurement and accessibility, then issues of subsidies, of investment in agriculture, particularly relative investment in different sectors, is important. Tax policy, and particularly in relation to retail sector, it certainly has implications. I think the health systems and macroeconomy group probably has more to say than we are, but we recognize our links with that. We did try to spend a little time on data sources, and we didn't go beyond that. We didn't get into models particularly. But in terms of data sources, then some key things in relation to this discussion are food production data. There's national level data. Most countries have it, and FAO compiles it for all over the world, and data like food available for consumption type data. Potentially, there's data from industry association and retail sales. Although I'm not sure that there's no database that people could point to. There are farm sector statistics, so I mean, just knowing how many small farmers there are, or how many family farms, or how big farms are, you know, is all relevant. There are national consumption study surveys which have been mentioned, like NHANES, and, you know, and in India there were several national level and state level studies. So. And then clearly, like the case study we saw from India today, then clearly there's a potential for getting a lot of data on rate of consumption on from studies like that. Okay, that's the end of that.
Are there any questions?
I have a question burning my lips, knowing that Jordan Lebel was in this group, that there's no more sensory product development of healthy food and stuff like this in terms of innovation and so on.
Yeah. The group would have been happy to entertain that, but we just didn't get to that.
I think individual level preferences we alluded to.
Go to the mic.
Yeah, I think we could have fit it early at the beginning, looking at individual consumption and what drives individual consumption in terms of sensory preferences. A lot of work being done on texture and stuff like that, understanding that level driver, certainly.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, we basically black box processing. There's so much you could do with processing which connects with that particular point.
Another question?
Yeah, I just wanted to verify the comment. Can you give an example of the kind of food processing you're thinking of here? You're talking about taking something that's sort of not really tasty but healthy and making it tasty and healthy?
I'm thinking of various technological innovation that could make healthy diet supporting food more appealing, more convenient, more tasty, and so on. Whether it is, for instance, reducing fat or sugar content and so on, in fact, in the domain of salt, that's one of the key factors. You will not be able to reduce salt consumption if you don't work on improving sensory quality. The same thing in fruit and vegetable. Mm-hmm. Are there ways that technology can work in making those more taking a larger share of both share of R&D, share of shelf space, share of advertisement, share of everything. And I think that that's a core driver I'm looking at Jordan because I know that that's his data, and I think it is important.
Yeah, that we struggle with that in one of the avenues of conversation we had around that is that, you know, companies will invest in such R&D and will take such a product to market if they feel that there is a return on investment to be made. And sometimes it's a very difficult case. You need someone to sort of see through, and the data at first that you might have might not show that there's a case. In the case of sodium, for example, I know that a lot of companies just missed the boat and weren't able to meet their target with a product that would still deliver bang for the buck and that consumers would like. So that there's a big question right there. And then I think another driver, when you look at some of these R&D projects, many of them are driven by food technologists. That's one thing to deliver a product that might be outstanding. Then you put it on the shelf and it doesn't sell. Not because it's a bad product, because other drivers of adoption, other, you know, things that matter weren't there. The producer could not get the right placing or shelf in the supermarket, was unable to put money in advertising, was unable to cut through the clutter and tell consumers that, hey, our product is good. So it's not just a question of sensory preference. A lot of other things must come together as well.
This issue is also a very relevant issue in developing countries, Indians, Sub-Saharan Africa, where many of the very high-quality foods that you know, could be better utilized and be alternatives to the high energy foods. Our traditional legumes, cereals, and things have been used for time immemorial, but many of them have unpalatability factors in them, and many of them are inconvenient for urban consumption. And so, in order to make those make a market for them and make them palatable in the urban sector, then you need to process them in some way. And otherwise, people are going to eat rice and noodles and, you know, vegetable oil.
think we have time for one more question.
Hi, Tim.
Hi, Paul. This is the Paul that was missing, was AWOL before, when we really needed you. We don't need you now.
Yes, you do, Tim. I guess my question is during your presentation, I don't know if the way you presented the material, you seem to make it that the agriculture and agri-food sector supply things to grocery stores and then we went out and bought them.
Yeah, we black boxed that. That's simple. We didn't get into that in the complexity of that.
Okay, but I would say that one of the things that may be missing, and some of the individual preferences came out later on, but I think you should be looking at the agriculture and agri-food sector as a sector that reacts to consumers, not that the supply side isn't the one driving the system, but rather it's the demand side driving the system. So if we provide consumers with information about the health of a product, then the consumers will either decide to either buy it or not buy it. But it's not that the supply side is giving us products and they're really not what we want. If you look at some of the retail chains, even though there may be only four or five of them in Canada, competition is rather brisk. And if you look at somebody like Loblaws, who introduced green products, they basically found out that consumers wanted these products, and they were the first off the mark, and they made a lot of money doing it. And I think what I'm trying to get at is that we have to get the consumer side educated and information to consumers so that the system will change if consumers want healthier food. And I think it's important that we recognize it's the demand side that'll change the supply side. It's not the supply side is going to change what people are going to eat. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, I think that's just, I agree with that. I don't, you know, we tried to do is present some sort of balance between those. Maybe it didn't come through. And having said that, though, there's a lot of things in the way that the current demand side is structured that determine what ends up in our stores. The fact that vegetable oil, sugar, wheat flour is cheap. You know, why is Tim Hortons the most successful company in Canada? I mean, their cost of their inputs are so low. So those types of things drive the system as well. So, you know, the system has to, it exists as it is, and the change is going to come probably from where you are, certainly where we can make innovations. And this is the point about, you know, having new conceptual alternatives and changing demand. And certainly education, I agree, is absolutely fundamental. But some of the structural things maybe have to be more proactive, though, in part of government. That's where policy is, you know, is important.
I won't extend the discussion further, but I would like to put 2 points on the further discussion, which is a bit in reaction to the exchange between Paul and Tim just now. I think that when we look at systems dynamics and feedbacks and so on, I am pleased to disagree with Paul. I do often. It is not the case that demand is driving supply kind of as a fixed thing. We need to look at the dynamics of a bit of supply, a bit of demand, and so on in the feedback loop. And that's what I would like to see as discussion later. And the other point also for discussion later, I think, we have in the intervention that was presented this morning the one with this health efforts for the self industry initiative, I think it's a perturbation to the system that could also be very interesting to discuss in terms of modeling and measure for subsequent for the discussion later.
That's great. Thank you very much. Why don't we take a 10-minute break and then come back, and then the next group will be schools and community and social environment. So we'll start up again at 2:35.